Hotep, everybody. Hey, this is Michael M. Hotep, founder of the African History Network and host of the African History Network show. I'm here with one of our esteemed scholars when it comes to African history, African-American history. You've heard him on the African History Network show before. I'm talking about the one and only Dr. Malefe Ketiasante. Hotep, brother, how you doing today?
Hotep, Yom Hotep. I'm very good. I'm blessed. And I'm ready to be on this very popular show.
Yes.
We've certainly heard about your work and appreciate the work that you're doing. It's essential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as well as with you, man, and I've been inspired by you. Probably the first time I saw you on TV was on Tony Brown's Journal.
Back
in the early 1990s, man.
You one of the few people to remember that. But
Tony
had me on periodically.
Tony Brown's Journal. And I grew up watching Tony Brown's Journal because my parents watched it.
Yeah,
so that's how I learned about him. Every Sunday, 4 p.m. I think it's 4 or 5 p.m. PBS here in Detroit. That's how I learned about you.
I love it.
All right. So many people have seen the interviews I've done with Anthony Browder as well as Dr. Charles Finch.
Yes.
And we were talking about the documentary from executive producer Jada Pinkett Smith. Is in the African Queens series. Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix. And the trailer dealing with the installment dealing with Queen Cleopatra VII caused a lot of controversy, a lot of Arab backlash, anti-African backlash, things like this. So it came out May 10th, 2023. I've seen it. And I thought it was fantastic. I know you did a lecture recently dealing with Queen Cleopatra, this documentary, and the Arab anti-blackness backlash, things like this. So I want to have this conversation with you today on this topic. So let me ask you a question, brother. Have you seen this documentary yet on Netflix?
No, I have not seen the documentary.
Okay.
My issue is not the documentary per se. I mean, and I would like to see it. I mean, I'm not opposed to see it. I want to see it.
Yes.
But not the issue. The issue is, for me, a problem of racial hatred of African people as expressed by the Arab indignation about an African woman playing the role of Cleopatra. That's the issue. The issue is it is time for African people to resist the incredible encroachment of Arab nationalism onto African culture and the attempt to erase African people from Africa's own history, particularly on the land of Africa itself. So
it's
a serious problem, and it's not just a problem of a movie. It is actually what's happening in Sudan right now. It's the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Arab stations are saying that Sudan is an original part of Arabia, of course. So this is what they're saying today, yesterday.
Right.
So in Arabic, they are having a real strong resistance to Africa asserting itself. And I'm of course one of those people who believe that we have to resist any attempt to falsify the record of African history. So that's where this debate comes with me: how to deal with this question, and how to raise this question in a proper context so that African people, not just here in the diaspora but also on the continent of Africa, began to take up their own intellectual and scholarly arms to fight against this encroachment. We have to do that. And part of our confusion as African people, to a large degree, over the last 400 or 500 years, and even before that, really that part of that confusion has been because of the Arabization, just like it has been the Europeanization of African people and African cultures. So we've got to adjust to that, and I think that we've slept enough. It's time for us to wake up.
Okay, we've slept enough. It's time for us to wake up. And I've looked at a lot of the different comments, the backlash coming from Arabs in who are in Egypt today, who are what are referred to as modern day Egyptians. And I know in your lecture, you made the distinction between Egyptian being citizenship, as in the modern term, Egyptian today, and understanding an Egyptian in the past when it would be what we would call ancient Kemet, Kemet, things of this nature. Can you talk about that nuance for a minute?
I think that's a very wonderful observation. Yeah, I can talk about it quite specifically. What the Arab population has largely done in Kemet, in Egypt, is to hijack the term Egyptian. That's basically what they have tried to do.
Yes.
And the idea is that the way they have done it is very interesting, because what they have done is to claim that ancient Egypt was the same as contemporary Egypt. Mm-hmm. And of course, that is not true. I mean, that's false on the very face of it. I mean, almost anybody can see that. And I've said this, you know, when I've talked about the American situation, I've told people that 500 years ago, the land that we call the United States of America didn't look like it does today,
right,
in terms of the diversity of the people. So that to claim that Egyptian today is the same as Egyptian, the Egyptians who built the pyramids, or who Egyptians who built the temples and the tombs and created writing, is a false thing. And not only is it false, but it also disrespects the black people who are direct descendants of those ancient Egyptians who still live in Egypt. So right. It's like, wait a minute. I mean, we're still here. It's like, it's almost like your white Americans saying basically the Pueblos in New Mexico were created by Europeans. The
right.
Native Americans are still the people who do not, the DNA people who created them are still here.
Exactly.
So it's a very weird kind of situation. And years ago, one of the great Nigerian philosophers, Chinweizu, warned us that this was coming. He anticipated that what there would be a very strong attempt on the part of Arab nationalists to, in fact, redefine the Nile Valley civilization as Arab civilization. And okay. Of course, we are seeing this encroachment day by day. And Jada Pinkett Smith did a profound assertion, and her production crew did a profound assertion that was based as much on fact as anybody else could have done. I mean, and I think that that is the thing. I mean, we have every indication that Cleopatra, we know, well, first of all, we know, first of all, that Cleopatra was not German. We know right. She was not English. We right. know she was not Arab. In fact, we know that we don't even have an Arab population in Kemet in large numbers until the 7th century,
right.
This era. So we know these facts. I mean, and you have a guy like Zawhi Hawass, who mm-hmm. basically is a salesperson. That's what I call him. He has now tried to rehab himself because he got into difficulty before, and now he's trying to rehab himself by being a salesperson for tourism in Egypt. That's what he does. That's his only thing. And so to do that, he often has to tell things that are untrue and say things that are not correct. And right. he did that in Philadelphia. We demonstrated against him when he came to Philadelphia for that.
When was this?
This was several years ago when they had the King Tutankhamun exhibition.
Okay.
At our Franklin Museum, it was wonderful, because he was cornered by an African American woman reporter, Helen Blue, and said to him, she said to him, Mr. Hawass, why do you keep saying that King Tut was not black? Was he black? And then he simply, out of exasperation, said, yes, he was black. So leave me alone, basically. You see what I'm
right.
saying? So,
right.
So then what I've followed him. I've watched his work. His work is
right.
His work is to be drama for Egypt. And the drama for Egypt really creates excitement in European countries for, well, I need to go and see what Hawass has seen. He's
king. Right.
But there are no Arabs in ancient Egypt. There's no population of them. Cleopatra right. could never have been an Arab. That was not possible, you see.
Exactly. So exactly.
It's a very, very strange situation, and the smartest thing. And I wrote this in my book. I wrote a book called "Culture and Customs of Egypt," and this book okay. published several years ago, maybe 15 to 20 years ago. And I tried to put this business to rest at that time. And for a long time, I thought we had really solved this issue. With history, this is a historical situation. It's not a situation that black people are having some opinion about something. This is a historical fact, you know. So let's deal with the historical facts, and that's what I've tried to do with the whole question of Cleopatra. You see,
right? Exactly. So I want to show this timeline of history here, just very briefly. For people who may not be familiar with this information. And then I want to show you a couple articles here, because I've been dealing with this on the African History Network show as well. And, you know, I'll have people who I guess they're Arabs who will, you know, make these anti-black statements and different things of this nature. But first off, if we look here, let me... flip over here. Okay, so this is a timeline of dealing with global African history that I use. This one here is from past.org, blackpast.org. They have about 6,000 pages of articles dealing with African history and African-American history. But if we just look at this here briefly, okay, so 332 BC, that's an important date that we need to understand. 332 BCE, before the Common Era, you have Alexander the Greek, or Alexander the Great. He conquers Egypt, okay? And then we know he dies in 323 BC, and one of his generals, Ptolemy the First, Soterlaghi, becomes ruler of Egypt, okay? When we look at we go down, we don't see the Arabs come in until 639 AD. Okay. Now, Cleopatra the Seventh was born in 69 BCE, before the Common Era, 69 BCE. So she's born about close to 700 years before the Arabs invade in Egypt. All right. So what I saw in some videos, like on social media, some comments, things like this, Arabs who are there today, whose citizenship is Egyptian, were claiming that black people were trying to steal their heritage. Or, go ahead.
It's the direct opposite.
Yes.
No. It's not black people trying to steal Arab heritage. Is the Arabs trying to steal the black people's heritage?
That's exactly.
No, come on. No. You know, it's one of these weird worlds. I mean,
yes.
In fact, what we have to say, and this is very interesting, and I've had this debate for 40 years with many people from that part of the world. What we have to say is that there was conquest. That's true. That is correct. The Arabs did come in, and they came in actually at the invitation of African people. The African people asked the Arabs to come in and help them throw off the Romans, because after the death of Cleopatra, the Romans took over. and they took charge of Kemet. And after so many hundred years, the Arab military was growing strong because of Islam. They had battled many people and conquered many people. So they were asked to come and help throw off the Romans, which they did. And the general was called Amir el-Az. El-Az stayed. He decided that Egypt was a good place. Why go back to the desert? I'm in the fertile territory of the Nile River. Let's just stay here. And then, of course, brought many, many Arab people into Egypt. And that began the domination of the culture and the enforcement, of course, of the Islamic religion. But it was the Arab conquest of Egypt that really created this whole commercial notion of taking over the creative innovations of African people and claiming them as Arab creations. Arabs didn't build the pyramids. Arabs didn't build the tombs. They didn't build the temples. They didn't create writing. None of that is attributable to the Arab population.
Exactly. And it's important to note that the ancient Kemetic people, the ancient Kemites, they stopped building pyramids in the toward the end of the sixth dynasty. Okay. They stopped building pyramids somewhere around 2300 BC, something like that. Okay. Long before the Arabs come in.
Yeah.
Long before the Romans come in. Long before the Greeks come
in. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and if we really want to deal with it, even before the people called Hebrews was said to have come into Egypt. The Africans have stopped building pyramids also.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is all about, and this is why I think your channel is a good channel, African history. I mean, it's all about correcting these impressions that were based on the idea that African people had been conquered, that we had been enslaved. And so people took advantage of the situation that African people found themselves in. And that meant that for those of us in the U.S., for 246 years, people could write anything they want to write about us because we were not writing in large numbers and we were not reading in large numbers. You see? And then the Arab conquest of Kemet and the attempted conquest, and they still had it in Sudan, and my ancestors trace to Sudan on my mother's side. So when you start talking about the whole situation of the Nile Valley, the idea is how do you take that away from Africa? But that's the attempt. And so by Arabizing African people to make them think that they are Arabs, they have created this internal situation where you have fighting and factions going on in places like Sudan and still in southern Egypt as well as in Chad and Niger and so on. Those areas are volatile, and they're volatile because there's some people who say, well, I don't mind being Muslim, but I don't want to be an Arab. You know, I have my own language. I have my own grandmother, my own grandfather. But they want to make me an Arab, and they want to change my name, change my language, and do all of that. But people are saying, you know, let me be, if you say that I'm a Muslim, I'm a Muslim, that's fine. But don't make me an Arab. And don't say that I'm Arab. And don't punish me because I don't take your name I don't use your language and so forth. So this is a question of the notion of Arab supremacy over African people. This is why it's almost like it's not inherent, but it is endemic to the Arab notion of the relationship between Africans and Arab people. And that notion is that African people are below Arabs. That's a negative notion that cannot be allowed to exist in the 21st century. And we have to fight it. And this is why I came out with a lecture on Jada Pinkett Smith, because whatever celebrities are brave enough, like Kevin Hart or her, say yes. these kind of things, and they're not scholars. They just know what the general plausibility is. I mean, what's probable? I mean, the fact that right. Cleopatra, for example, was a descendant of a Greek leader doesn't mean much after 300 years. mm-hmm. It's almost like I was telling somebody, and I said this often, that in my own family, I have people who maybe four generations ago had white paternity, some white right. man in the family. But they're not, if you look at them today, they're not white. So you can right. have Greek paternity 300 years ago, and still your complexion today will be black. You see what I'm saying? So we don't, mm-hmm. that's a debate that is ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense to me. And some people say, well, right. she was of Greek descent. Yeah. And Henry Louis Gates says 30% of all African Americans have white paternity. They are of white right. descent because of the rape of the enslaved African women on the plantations. So you got right. 30% of us have that, but today we don't go around saying we're white. This is not a, that's not,
well, yes. Right. Yes. Most of us don't. Yeah.
Most of us don't.
Some of us may think white, like Clarence Thomas, but
thank you
know,
you are very correct. Most of us.
I get your point though.
But you're right. I can't get too passionate about this because you're right. I can be proven wrong on that. But I think basically what I'm saying is that mm-hmm. the debate about what complexion Cleopatra is. I mean, right. The plausible thing, the most likely thing is that she was number one of dark complexion. That's mm-hmm. most plausible, given the fact that that the Greeks were just a ruling class in Kemet at the time, and they ruled for 300 years, at least that particular right. family ruled for 300 years, but that particular family, as a Greek family, I am sure, I don't know, but I am sure they had African people in that family. They had to have. They're in an African country. They are surrounded by African people. They're right. ruling and serving and working and fighting in the army that's basically African army. Why, wait a minute. And you're telling me for 300 years, this pure Greek white family ruled in Egypt, and there were no blackness in there? No, that's not true. And in fact, right. Arsinoe, the fourth, who mm-hmm. was Cleopatra's right. sister, has been proven to be of African descent. So
exactly. I'm going to show an article that deals with that. Absolutely. The BBC had a documentary dealing with
absolutely.
That. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Arsinoe the fourth is depicted in the documentary Cleopatra from Jada Pinkett Smith also.
Oh, okay. Great.
He's depicted in there. Yes.
That's good. I need to see that. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's on Netflix. It's about, I think, something like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. It's fantastic. All right. So for the sake of time, because I know you're short
on
time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got another appointment.
Okay, he made time to come on. We were trying to get him on last week, but he was in and out of town, so it was hectic. Let's do this. I want to show this article briefly. This is from NBCNews.com. This was one of the strongest statements against the documentary from the Egyptian government. The name of this article is Cleopatra Was Not Black, Egypt Tells Netflix in Growing Feud Ahead of New Series. Now, first of all, I just want to make it clear. The documentary series is not saying that Cleopatra was black as was, say, Queen T or Queen Nefertiti or Nefertari or anything like this. What it's saying was basically she was melanated and she looked more like Adele James, who portrayed Cleopatra in this series. And Adele James is biracial. She's a black British actress. They were saying that Cleopatra looked more like Adele James than she would have Elizabeth Taylor in 1963 in the movie Cleopatra.
Of course, okay, that's correct.
This is the argument that they're making. But if we just look here, just at a couple of quick here, It says here, let's see, go to the government statement issued Thursday marked an escalation in a feud that has sparked demands for the show's cancellation amid a broader debate over representation and popular culture. And if we look here, Egypt has accused, let's back up. Egypt has accused Netflix of misrepresenting history by casting a black woman to play Cleopatra, its most famous historical figure, in a new series. Queen Cleopatra, which is released May 10th, features Adele James in the lead role, a casting decision that the streaming giant Netflix says, quote, is a nod to the centuries-long conversation about the ruler's race, but which officials in Cairo have dismissed as, quote unquote, blatant historical fallacy. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm not in the business necessarily of always supporting Netflix, but I want to say, in this case, Netflix was correct. Mm-hmm. And the audiences who have decided not to see this film are missing out on something, from what I understand, because of this controversy. But the Egyptian government is wrong. No government can take some sort of action to try to dictate history. And that's basically what they're doing. This is a very fascistic operation. I've been to Egypt 10 or 12 times. I've taken mm-hmm. hundreds of people to Egypt. And I've seen Egypt. So it is very, very difficult. In fact, right now, Egyptians are writing me saying they disagree with the government. You know what I'm saying? Yes. I got people writing me saying, because I made this statement, and I'll make it here. I have rarely seen an Arab progressive who speaks out against racism against black people in Egypt or in Sudan. I've not seen that. I've seen Europeans who are progressives who spoken out against white supremacy, but I don't see the Arabs doing that. And so this Arab wrote me from Germany. Yes, I'm one of the ones who speak out, but I still have not seen any indication of this. You see, I haven't seen any real fact. So in this situation, Netflix is correct to take artistic license to do this, and they are more on a solid historical base and foundation than the Egyptian government, because the Egyptian government is simply trying to promote Arab nationalism against the historical black foundation of the ancient Egyptian government.
Right. And they're also trying to promote tourism as well. Absolutely. And tourism took a hit during COVID-19. Absolutely. But also their tourism has taken a hit with the Russian invasion of Ukraine as well.
Absolutely. Because the Russians were big people in the tourist business. When you would go, you would see a lot of the Russians. But now to say that that Cleopatra was black. Oh my goodness! The Europeans say, "I'm not going to go to Egypt anymore."
Even just to have a biracial woman portraying her and just saying that Cleopatra had melanin is scaring the hell out of people.
Because the white imaginary of Egypt, of course, is, as you say, is white.
It's Ten Commandments.
And of course, even in the Ten Commandments, they don't have, at least they don't go with Cleopatra as an Arab. You see, at least the Europeans put her in as an English woman, you know, a British woman. So, but we still,
they show Nefertari. With Ramses, they show Nefertari as a white woman.
Absolutely. So this is what's going on. But I think we have to do a number of things. Maulana Karenga used to say that Cleopatra was basically unremarkable as a leader anyway. So there's a big controversy. But if you start talking about Queen Tai or Hatshepsut, this is talking about great leaders as well, great women who had power and who exercised power. So Bekenefru and other women who were leaders in their own right, Amenarensis, the Nubian queen who stopped Augustus from taking over Nubia and so forth. So there are many, many other issues, but I think that this issue here is basically an issue that is anti-African. That's basically what it is. And yes. I think that we just have to keep saying, look, no Arab was ever a pharaoh in Egypt. No Arab was ever Cleopatra, because that was not true. Even if you say she had Greek descent, she right. also most likely had African ancestry as well. And right. And then we also know that Arabic is not indigenous to Africa as a language. It's not. It's an African language now, just like English is an African language now, right. and French. But it was not an African language.
Absolutely. This article here, because I was on KBLA 1580 AM, which is Tavis Smiley's radio station in Southern California. I was on this past Tuesday on the Danny Morrison show. And one of the things we talked about was this this documentary series and some of the history of Queen Cleopatra VII, et cetera. This article here from the Washington Post is a really good article by Bethany Butler. Was Cleopatra Black? We're asking the wrong question. Now, one of the things I talked about this on Roland Martin Unfiltered, and some other shows I've been on, and in my interviews with Tony Browder, as well as Dr. Anthony Finch, the racial classification of Black and white are contemporary terms. Absolutely. Contemporary classification, 17th century, 18th century, things like this. Back at this time, 69 BC, they don't have those classifications.
Absolutely. Okay?
So it's just important to understand that nuance. But something very, so, you know, we're trying to look at, a lot of people are trying to look at this history from over 2,000 years ago through the contemporary lens of race today. But something very important in this article is a statement from Jada Pinkett Smith, and it's on Netflix's companion website called Tudum, T-U-D-U-M. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's on this, the third page here. I'm going to go to this because it helps clear up a lot of this confusion, because even in the documentary series, once again, they're not saying Cleopatra was Black. More so they're saying she wasn't white. Okay? So... Yeah. But it's, let's see here. Pinkett Smith told Netflix's companion website, Tudum, that the goal of African Queens, with the documentary series African Queens, which launched earlier this year, 2023, with a look at the 17th century ruler Nzinga, that was good also, that one, was to share underrepresented stories about historical women who were so powerful and were the backbone of African nations. She said, we don't often get to see or hear stories about Black queens, and that was really important for me as well as for my daughter, and just for my community to be able to know those stories, because these are tons of them, because there are tons of them, Jada Pinkett Smith said. Comment on that for a minute. There's another quote that I want to get to. Go ahead, brother.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that she's definitely right. I mean, I don't... And I think that the whole question of what is, when you start talking about Africanity, mm-hmm. the argument that is most likely to be sustainable is that Cleopatra was certainly an African woman. And, if you're in Africa for 300, your ancestors are in Africa for 300 years.
Right.
What you are culturally an African person. And I think that the ancient, Greeks were very interesting because they did not try to appropriate Egypt at first. They right. learned from Egypt. They learned. And in fact, they wanted, Alexander himself, 300 years earlier than Cleopatra, wanted the oracles of Kemet to recognize him as one of the sons of God. I mean, this is very
right, Alexander.
Traditional, you see, yeah. We don't have an argument with the Greeks, and even the contemporary Greeks don't argue these issues.
Right,
this is an Arab issue. This is Arab imperialism in Africa. And Dr. Sally Ann Ashton, a PhD from Cambridge and an Egyptologist, has argued that most of these arguments are agendas of white supremacy. But I argue that this is an agenda of Arab supremacy. The idea is we cannot, they don't, number one, they basically have persecuted, oppressed, and brutalized African people, dark-skinned right. people in Egypt and in Sudan. And now they cannot stand the fact that on the American nation, on the American side, that Africa, a woman of African descent, has said what is correct, that, hey, wait a minute, I'm suggesting that this African queen is significant as an African person. And and we come in all complexions. I mean, as
right.
we're the most diverse group of people on the face of the earth. I mean, right. in Africa, I've seen all kinds of people in Africa. You know, this is African population is light, it's dark, it's brown, it's red, it's yellow. It's we have everything on the continent.
And exactly.
If you travel, they will see this. There's no argument. Why is there an argument? There's only an argument because this is a person who Jada Pinkett Smith has said, and her production people have said, look, this actress represents Cleopatra. And I think it's just as legitimate, more legitimate than having Elizabeth Taylor to do it.
Absolutely. Lastly here, and then I'm going to give you a website and let people let you tell people how they can contact you. This is the article I was looking for. Now, this just came out May 12, 2023. CNN.com, Queen Cleopatra actress Adele James talks blackwashing, quote unquote blackwashing. And in here, we scroll down, it talks about how her ethnicity is, now this is a statement from the producers of the documentary. Her ethnicity is not the focus of Queen Cleopatra, the documentary series, but we did intentionally decide to depict her of mixed ethnicity to reflect theories about Cleopatra's possible Egyptian ancestry and the multicultural nature of ancient Egypt. Okay, talk about that for a minute, because at the time they even say this in the documentary. At the time that Cleopatra was born, the populations that are there in Egypt are the indigenous African people, the Greeks, and they also talk about Hebrews or Jews being there.
I would not have written a statement like that because, okay. You know, it's just like when I go to France, mm-hmm. I mean, and I see a whole lot of African people in France, in Paris. But I wouldn't say, I mean, France is a white nation. You know right. what I'm saying? It's like you go to Australia, you see people from Asia and people from Papua New Guinea and everywhere, but Australia is a white nation. Mm-hmm. So ancient Kemet in 300 BC mm-hmm. was a black nation.
Yes.
It was conquered by Alexander's army, and they imposed a Greek rulership over that black nation.
Over a black nation, right.
Yes.
Right.
Don't confuse matters. It became more multi-ethnic later as okay. more Greeks came, as later in the
Romans.
Era of the Romans. Yes. And the Persians and many people came. But the further you go backwards, the blacker the country is.
Oh, correct. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. All right. I know you're short on time, brother. Yeah. Tell people how they can contact you, and then we've got your website that I'm gonna pull up right here as well. Let people okay. know how they can contact you if they want to bring you in, do a lecture or anything like that.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, but let me get tell you, you got my website, maleficeteasante.com.
Yes.
And you can also see our lectures at our think tank, the Malefic Ete Asante Institute. It's okay. MKA Institute lecture series. And if you go to YouTube, you'll see our lectures as well. We appreciate you very much, Michael. Thank you.
All right, brother. All right, brother. It's good to catch up with you. Good to talk to you again. Hotel.
Good. All right. Hotel.
All right, brother. Peace.
Peace.
All right, everybody. He has to run. He has another commitment. Don't go anywhere. We have more information for you as well. And I'm teaching on Saturdays, I teach my online history classes as well. Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, understanding the transatlantic slave trade, what they didn't teach you in school. So we have a session of that coming up at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today, May 20th, 2023. And we'll give you information about that. And we're going to do a free session of the class today. So you can register for that at our website, theafricanhistorynetwork.com. theafricanhistorynetwork.com. I'm going to post a link here, and you can register for the full 12-week, actually it's about 14 weeks this time around. You can register for the full 14-week online course. We deal with thousands of years of history and what leads up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place, and I do a PowerPoint presentation. We have book references, articles, video clips, etc. So that was Dr. Malefe Ketiasante that we just spoke with. And he was the former, he used to be the chair of the Afro-American Studies Department at Temple University in Philadelphia. He has written over 100 books dealing with African history, African-American history, and probably about 500 articles or so as well. So he's one of our esteemed scholars. All right, how's everybody doing today? Share this broadcast on your social media platforms. Invite your friends to tune in as well. And go to our website, theafricanhistorynetwork.com, theafricanhistorynetwork.com. We have information dealing with our radio show, the African History Network show, our classes, all that there. If you want to support the African History Network, you can do so. $THEAHNshow. Through Cash App, $THEAHNshow through Cash App, also through PayPal, paypal.me/theAHNshow. That helps us keep doing the research, keep broadcasting our Sunday night show. I'm on Sundays, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the African History Network show on 9:10 a.m., the Superstation WFDF here in Detroit. So you can support us. Cash App, PayPal. This is the interview I did with Tony Browder. Follow us on our YouTube channel, Michael M. Hotep, I-M-H-O-T-E-P. But on Saturdays, I teach Ancient Kemet, one of the original names for Egypt, Ancient Kemet, the Moors, and the Ma'afa, understanding the transatlantic slave trade, where they didn't teach you in school. So the class is regularly $130. It's on sale $60. You can register for the full course. We do the sessions live. All the sessions are archived and recorded. So you can go back and watch them anytime, even a year from now, 2 years from now, you can go back and watch the entire course. Okay. We're going to do, so register for the full course. And then we also would do a free class session today, as well. So we'll have that link available here in just a minute at our website, theafricanhistorynetwork.com. Now on Sundays, I teach Black resistance movements from the Haitian Revolution, U.S. Civil War, Civil Rights Movement, and Black Power Movement. That class is 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we deal with history from 1800 to 1968, okay? Fantastic class. We deal with history chronologically to understand what happened to us after slavery ended and what led up to the Civil War taking place. What were the laws and policies put in place after slavery ended, and what brought us to where we are today to understand where we need to go from here. Your understanding of politics is directly related to your understanding of history. I'm a historian. I've been studying history for 31 years. I'm also a political commentator as well. You see me on Roland Martin Unfiltered on Fridays. I was just on yesterday. So you see me on Roland Martin Unfiltered as well as for Raji Muhammad's show, The Culture. And I'm there providing historical analysis and political analysis. All right, so give us a thumbs up, give us a heart, give us a like on this broadcast. We posted the link. You can register for these online classes. We also have a bundle pack, a course bundle. We could register for both classes for $80 is discounted. That's a $300 value. And you can register for both classes for $80 right now. You can also use this information with your children. I would say the content is PG-13, okay? All right, now, just to give you a brief overview of this class that I teach, it developed from a 4.5-hour lecture that I did in 2014 called Understanding the Transatlantic Slave Trade, what they didn't teach you in school. And it was... That lecture was the culmination of about seven years of research, okay? But when we study the transatlantic slave trade, we can't start studying our history in slavery. We have to deal with the 800-year occupation of Europe by the Africans known as the Moors, and we have to understand this history chronologically, what leads up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. So we can't start in 1441 with the Portuguese going into Mauritania. We can't start in 1619 in Virginia, okay, or Hampton, Virginia. We can't start there. And it's also important to note that African people were in the land that we call the United States of America going back at least 51,700 years ago. Okay, so and you have to deal with the 800-year occupation of Europe by the Africans known as the Moors, because the Portuguese are the first ones involved in the transatlantic slave trade. The Spanish are the second ones involved. And Columbus is using nautical instruments that's based upon technology that the Moors introduced into Europe. And the teachings that the Moors take into Europe are going to bring Europe out of the Dark Ages. Okay, and the Moors had taken the teachings from ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt, into the Nile Valley region of Africa. And these teachings are going to save Europe. Okay, and if it had not been for the teachings from the Moors, probably millions more people would have died from the Black Death, the bubonic plague that hits Europe in spurts from 1347 Common Era AD to 1400. So this course not only deals with the transatlantic slave trade, but thousands of years of history that leads up to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. All right, so it's important for us to understand that African people are the original people of North, Central, and South America and have been in the land that we call the United States of America at least 51,700 years ago. So we look at things. So there's about seven books that we use as a reference. And I show you excerpts of the book on the screen. You don't have to buy any of these books to follow along in class. There's about 80 articles that we'll look at. We show that to you on the screen as well. This book right here, The First Americans Were Africans, Documented Evidence, from one of my friends, Dr. David M. Hotep. Many of you have seen the interviews I've done with Dr. David M. Hotep over the years. His book is backed up by 713 footnotes and 7 peer-reviewed articles. On page 14 of his book, he deals with evidence. He deals with a discovery in Allendale County, South Carolina, that documents an African presence in the Americas going back at least 51,700 years ago. Okay. This was discovered by Dr. Albert Goodyear, who's an archaeologist at the University of South Carolina. They found 13 different types of evidence thoroughly documenting an African presence in the Americas dating back at least 51,700 years ago. They found artifacts, architecture, campsites, carvings, Egyptian writings, footprints in lava, genetic M174D haploid groups dealing with DNA and genetics. They found linguistics, paintings, skulls, skeletons, structures, and tools. They found 13 different types of evidence thoroughly documenting an African presence in this country going back at least 51,700 years ago. This is long before the transatlantic slave trade. This does not mean that the transatlantic slave trade did not happen. It means that African people were here in this land that we call the United States of America as well as in the Americas, tens of thousands of years before the transatlantic slave trade started. And this is why it's so important for us to understand this history, because if you think that you first came to this land conquered and shackled and chained by Europeans, okay, then you're going to be psychologically damaged from that. The truth of the matter is this was our land stolen from us. African people were here even before Native Americans came into existence. So now this is an article from ScienceDaily.com. ScienceDaily.com has articles dealing with science, archaeological discoveries, different things like this. This is an article about this discovery that Dr. Albert Goodyear made. It's from November 18, 2004. It's called New Evidence Puts Man in North America 50,000 Years Ago. New Evidence Puts Man in North America 50,000 Years Ago. And in the article, it says, this is a summary of the article, okay? It says that radiocarbon tests of carbonized plant remains were where artifacts were unearthed last May. That would have been May 2023. Well, that would have been May 2004, along the Savannah River in Allendale County by University of South Carolina archaeologist Dr. Albert Goodyear, indicate that the sediments containing these artifacts are at least 50,000 years old, meaning that humans inhabited North America at least long before the last ice age. Humans inhabited North America long before the last ice age. Okay, so who were these humans? Right now, these were the Khoisan, who are the short-statured Africans. Now, if we look here, there was a article in Science Magazine, an October 2012 genetic study published in Science Magazine found that the Khoisan in Southern Africa are the oldest ethnic group of modern humans. The Khoisan in Southern Africa are the oldest ethnic group of modern humans, with their ancestral line originating about 100,000 years ago. The Khoisan, formerly called by the derogatory term Bushmen, are genetically unique, and no other currently known population has separated so early from our common human ancestor. The Khoisan, formerly called Now, the Khoisan, formerly called by the derogatory term Bushmen, are genetically unique. Now, when we look here, these are two Khoisan women, okay? The Khoisan are the short-statured Africans. And there's a good article from AtlantaBlackStar.com that talks about the Khoisan also. The Khoisan live in Southern Africa in territory that is territory spanning Botswana, Namibia, Angola, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. They are largely divided into two groups, hunters and gatherers, the Sans people, and keepers of the livestock, the Khoikhoi people. The Khoisan languages include the distinctive click sounds, that are not found in the languages of their neighbors. So read the article from AtlantaBlackStar.com called Five Ethnic Groups That Prove the First Humans Were Black. Okay, so we go through and look at these different archaeological discoveries, scientific discoveries. We do that in the first two or three classes. This discovery here that came out in February 2010, this deals with on the Greek island of Crete. They found stone tools that date back 130,000 years ago. Stone tools that date back 130,000 years ago. And they said this is strong evidence for the earliest seafaring in the Mediterranean. Okay. And they said that this seems to push the history of Mediterranean voyaging back more than 100,000 years, specialists in Stone Age archaeology say. Previous artifact discoveries had shown people reaching Cyprus, a few other Greek islands, and possibly Sardinia no earlier than 10,000 to 100,000 years ago. Okay, so the deeper they dig, the blacker the planet gets, the more research they do, the older we get. And what this is, when these different archaeological discoveries come out, what it's doing is causing all the scientists and archaeologists, et cetera, to push the timelines back, Okay. You know, Juvenile had that song back in like 1988, 1999, back that thing up. They keep having to back that thing up when these archaeological discoveries come out. There was one that came out in June of 2017 dealing with Morocco, okay? And this deals with how they found remains of Homo sapiens in Morocco that date back 300,000 to 350,000 years ago, which are the oldest remains of Homo sapiens, modern man. Now, this article here from NBCnews.com, we're older than we thought. New find pushes human origin back 100,000 years. This is from June 7th, 2017. Modern humans evolved much earlier than previously thought, researchers reported Wednesday. New discoveries at a rich site in Morocco show modern humans were hunting and probably cooking game animals 300,000 years ago, which is 100,000 years earlier than scientists have believed until now. New discoveries and new dating methods show that, in fact, many of the bones belong to modern Homo sapiens as far back as 300,000 to 350,000 years ago. The earliest previous Homo sapiens bones dated back 195,000 years ago, and that was in Ethiopia. This pushes this timeline back over 100,000 years ago and 100,000 years prior to 195,000 years ago or so. It pushes the timeline back. And what they're realizing now is that Africans migrated out of the Nile Valley region of Africa much earlier than previously thought. Okay, much earlier than previously thought. Now, there was just an article that the New York Times had that just came out this past week. And this article here, let's see here if we can pull this up quickly. This article right here from the New York Times. We posted this on our Facebook fan page, The African History Network. Study offers new twist in how the first humans evolved. And is saying that scientists now believe that humans didn't evolve just in one area of Africa at one time. Study offers new twist in how the first humans evolved. A new genetic analysis of 290 people suggest that humans emerged at various times and places in Africa. Now, this is from May 17th, 2023. Okay. And when you look at the article, it talks about the discovery that was made in Morocco that I just showed you. Okay. Now, this article just came out this week. Scientists have revealed a surprisingly complex origin of our species, rejecting the long-held argument that modern humans arose from one place in Africa during one period in time. By analyzing the genomes of 290 living people, researchers concluded that modern humans descended from at least two populations that coexisted in Africa for 1 million years. For 1 million years before emerging in several independent events across the continent, the findings were published on Wednesday in Nature. Now, that's a popular journal dealing with scientific discoveries, the journal Nature, okay? Now, right here, excavations at the Jebel Irad archaeological site in Morocco, where 300,000-year-old fossils that may be the oldest evidence of Homo sapiens were found in 2017. That right there, that the excavation site, that's dealing with the article I just showed you from NBC News. That plays a part in this discovery right here that just came out this past week as well. Paleoanthropologists and geneticists have found evidence pointing to Africa as the origin of our species. The oldest fossils that may belong to modern humans, dating back as far as 300,000 years, have been unearthed there. So were the oldest stone tools used by our ancestors. Okay, so they're talking about the excavation site in Morocco. All right. Okay. So give us a thumbs up, give us a heart, give us a like on this broadcast. Hopefully you learned a lot today. Hopefully you like this type of information. If you learned anything today, you like this type of information, be sure to register for the online history classes that I teach on Saturdays and Sundays. And we're teaching another session a day, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can register for the full, this time around is 14 weeks. You can register for the full 14-week online course. You can go back and watch the previous sessions that are archived, because we do them live. All the sessions are archived and recorded. Today's session should be the last session. This would be session number 14 that we do today, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're making today's session a free session. When you go to our website, theAfricanHistoryNetwork.com, theAfricanHistoryNetwork.com, you can register for the free class session today, and be sure to register for the full online course that I teach, okay? Because that helps finance this research, that helps support the African History Network, that helps us keep doing the research, stay on the air, broadcast our Sunday night show, pay some of the bills, etc. All right. And I teach the class on two different digital platforms, so I have to pay each month to teach the class as well. All right. How you all like this type of information? Post your comments here. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a heart. Give us a like. Did you learn anything today? In this class, we deal some with some different ancient civilizations as well. You know, we talk about the Olmecs and Central in New Mexico. Well, not New Mexico, in Mexico, the Olmecs. And we talk about the Mandinka, Egyptian, Kemetic Olmec connection as well. We deal with ancient Kemet and the influence on America from ancient Egypt, ancient Kemet. Kemet meaning land of the blacks, one of the original terms of Egypt. Also, Ta Meri, meaning the beloved land. When you look at the Washington Monument, the Washington Monument is an ancient African symbol called a tekken. How many people knew that? Okay, the Greeks call it an obelisk. We know that the teachings from ancient Kemet helped form the foundation of the teachings in Freemasonry, and 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence are Freemasons. Okay, 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, 1776, were Freemasons. George Washington was a Freemason. So there were 1,200 tekkenu all throughout ancient Kemet. All right, today they're less than 12, is somewhere about 7 or so. And they've been taken to places around the world. They've been taken to like New York City, London, England, Paris, France. Ancient Egyptians called obelisks tekkenu, and they were used to tell the time in the past. Their pinnacles were basically covered in gold to reflect the sunlight. Historians say that obelisks represented immortality and eternity, and their long structure helped connect the heavens and the earth. Now, currently, Cleopatra's Needle is the name given to three ancient Egyptian obelisks, or tekkenu, one in New York City, one in London, England, and one in Paris, France. However, they do not all come from one Egyptian site. The obelisks in New York and London are carved out of red granite from the quarries of Aswan, a major source of stone for Egyptian antiquities. The two obelisks were commissioned by Nesubiti or Pharaoh of Thutmose III, or Per As, as Dr. Malefic Ketty Asante said, was the original term that we would use. Nasubiti would be a term as well. Nasubiti Thutmose III for the Temple of the Sun in Heliopolis near modern-day Cairo, with each weighing about 224 tons and standing 68 feet tall. So there's a good article from face2faceafrica.com from May 17th, 2022, about a year ago, called Cleopatra's Needle, How Three Ancient Egyptian Obelisks Ended Up in New York City, London, and Paris. Okay, and the Tekken is a symbol that comes from the story of Asar, Aset, Heru. Now, this may go outside the circumference of some people's awareness, who are also known as the First Holy Trinity. There were approximately 1,200 Tekkenu built in ancient Kemet, but only about a dozen are found in Egypt today. Many of the Tekkenu removed from Egypt are now in Istanbul, Turkey, London, England, Paris, France, Berlin, Germany, New York, New York, Rome, Italy, Vatican City, and elsewhere throughout the world. The Tekkenu are now called obelisks by their new owners, and few people know their origin or that they symbolize the resurrection of the African king Asar. Asar, who the Greeks called Osiris, who you see depicted here in the middle, stooping down, okay? Asar, Aset, and Heru. And Heru was born of a virgin birth on December 25th to the virgin Aset. And it's going to be from Aset and Heru that we get the story of the Black Madonna and Child that was worshipped all throughout Europe, including in France, because there's about 300 depictions of the Black Madonna and Child in France. Renoko Rashidi talks about this in his book, Black Star, the African Presence in Early Europe. From the Black Madonna and Child, we get the decolorized version in the story of the white Mary and Jesus, the decolorized version. But you have to understand where that all comes from. Okay, now, somebody asked a question about the class. So we have the information on the homepage of our website, theafricanhistorynetwork.com, theafricanhistorynetwork.com. Let me go back to it. So the full online course is on sale, $60. That's a $300 value, because they're going to be five free lectures that you get from me also that will be in the video library. So when you scroll down our website, theafricanhistorynetwork.com, we have the information right here. So on sale, $60, regularly $130. And next class is today, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I'm about to get out of here to get ready for class. And we'll have a free class session today, but you can register for the full 12-week online course. Click here to register for the full 12-week online course. Your membership, your registration in the class does not expire, meaning you can go back and watch. You'll have full access to watch the class, you know, next year, a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. It doesn't expire. You still have full access. You can go back and watch as many times as you want to. We have a bundle pack where you can register for both classes for $80. The second class I teach is on Sunday, and we'll be teaching a class Sunday, May 21st. Black resistance movements from the Haitian Revolution, U.S. Civil War, Civil Rights Movement, and Black Power Movement. The same format for the second class as well. We do the class live. The sessions are archived and recorded. You can go back and watch it anytime. You don't have to worry about being in class at a certain time or anything like that, okay? And we have a live chat where you can, a text chat where you can ask questions in class also. If you miss class, you can email me to ask your questions as well, okay? All right, but this is, hopefully you learned a lot. This is a lot of work to teach these classes, to do this broadcast, because I was doing this full-time. I don't do this full-time anymore. So it takes, you know, I do my radio show. I do Roland Martin's show on Fridays. Usually I'm on Faraji Muhammad's show on Tuesdays. And then, you know, I do other interviews as well. And people interview me and they're requesting interviews. I'm going to be on the road during the summer. It looks like I'll be at least a few places in the summer, and I'll be here in Detroit at different events also. So I stay busy. And my radio show is on every Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. the Eastern Standard Time, the African History Network show on 9:10 a.m. the Superstation WFDF here in Detroit. Now, the word Mason is derived from the Latin words mass and sun, mass and sun. Mason means child of light and expresses the desire to pursue light, the desire to pursue light, which is a metaphor for the sun, which symbolizes knowledge. The term child of light or sons and daughters of light was first used to identify students who had completed 42 years of study in the temples of ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt. Many Masonic temples were modeled after the temples of Kemet, places where light or knowledge was imparted in a series of steps or degrees, This comes from page 18 and 32 of Egypt on the Potomac by Tony Broughton. I just interviewed Tony about 4 weeks ago, and we were talking about why Nile Valley civilization matters, why Nile Valley civilization history matters, and we talked about Queen Cleopatra a little bit as well. The concept of going to an institution of higher learning and getting your credentials in a series of steps or degrees comes out of Africa. That comes out of the Nile Valley region of Africa, especially ancient Kemet. That comes from us, okay? What you do for yourself, what you do to yourself, and what you allow other people to do to you and get away with is based upon what you think about yourself. What you think about yourself is based upon what you have been taught about yourself. What you've been taught about yourself is based upon everything you've read, heard, and seen about yourself. So this is the type of information that changes the way we think, feel, act, and behave, and ultimately changes our results. It has a transformational impact on our mindset when we come into the knowledge of this, and we combine African history with economic empowerment and political empowerment. Okay. When you see that pyramid principle that I show you that Dr. Leonard Jeffries and Professor James Small talk about, I'll show that to you in just a minute. Now, Masonic temples are considered houses of light or temples of learning. The term Mason means child of light. Okay. And the term Mason is a direct reference to the highest degree of the ancient Kemetic education system. The 33 degrees of instruction within Freemasonry represent a fraction of the 360 degrees of instruction that comprise the ancient Kemetic or ancient Egyptian system of education. Yet, with less than 10% of the wisdom of ancient Kemet, Freemasons have held positions of influence and power throughout the world for over 200 years. They learned less than 10% of what the ancient Africans knew, and they've been able to basically conquer the world. This comes from page 33 of Egypt on the Potomac by Tony Browder. All right, so we go through our history and we look at different periods of history. We look at understanding what are patron saints. We go through history chronologically, okay? We look at the Moorish influence on Europe. Even when we look at something like center class is Dutch. It is Saint Nicholas. Center class means Saint Nicholas. And center class is the religious figure that the secular figure of Santa Claus is based upon. But center class had a sidekick named Joata Piet, Black Pete, and Black Pete was a Moor. And in one of the versions of the story, Black Pete was center class's slave. Okay. Some people may say servant, but he was defeated by center class and it became his slave. So we go through, look at things like why Christmas is celebrated on December 25th, because nowhere in the biblical text does it state that Christmas is celebrated on December 25th. And that deals with the winter solstice and a retelling of ancient stories dealing with Osar, Aset, and Heru, different things of this nature. Okay. Then we look at the 800-year occupation of Europe by the Africans known as the Moors. We look at different civilizations like that of Carthage, okay? Different empires like that of Carthage, the Carthaginians, Hannibal Barca. We look at Nubia as well, Axum, et cetera. We deal with the film Black Panther, okay? Because Black Panther represents, you see 11 different African cultures infused in the movie Black Panther. Ruth Carter was the costume designer. Ruth Carter studied 11 different African cultures for 6 months. And we see this represented in the film Black Panther. Bast, the panther deity, Bast is based upon Bastet. Bastet was a netter who was worshipped in the form of a lioness, okay? She was an African Egyptian goddess worshipped in the form of a lioness and later a cat. And she was a netter of warfare in lower Kemet, lower Egypt. She was worshipped as early as the Second Dynasty around 2890 BCE, before the Common Era, or BC, okay? So the film Black Panther is a powerful movie, the first one and the second one. There's so much African culture and history that we see represented in the movie. And then we go through and we look at the Moors going into Europe as well in 711 AD, and who are the Moors and the impact that the African Moors had on Europe and what they're taking into Europe. George G.M. James in the book Stolen Legacy said that the Moors were the custodians of the ancient Egyptian mystery system. And the teachings that the Moors take into Europe are going to bring Europe out of the Dark Ages. These are some actual slides from the class that I teach. So I created all the slides. I put together the curriculum for both classes. I've been studying history a long time. We talk about 711 AD, General Tariq ibn Ziyad goes in and conquers Spain, the Iberian Peninsula, and the Moors are going to settle in the southern portion of what today we call Spain, okay? And he's going to, he and his cavalry, they're going to conquer, they go into the Spanish city of Toledo, and they are going to end the European dominance of the Iberian Peninsula because it's under the control of the Vandals and the Visigoths at this time. This is who he's fighting against, especially the Visigoths. This is who he's fighting against and defeating, okay? All right, so we'll deal with the history of the Moors, and we'll see how the transatlantic slave trade evolves. And it starts with the Portuguese, and then we see the Spanish are right behind them. And we're going to see that Christopher Columbus greatly extends the transatlantic slave trade. And because of his four voyages and the territory that he conquers, and these areas that he conquers have never recovered from being conquered over 500 years ago by Spain. Okay. He goes into the Bahamas, Cuba, Hispaniola, the western third of the island of Hispaniola is where Haiti is. He goes into the West Indies, Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Trinidad, Venezuelan mainland, South America, Panama, Honduras, etc. Okay, so we see the conquering of the Taino and the Arawaks, things of this nature, the conquering of the Siboney, the conquering of these Native Americans in these areas like Jamaica and Hispaniola. We're going to see Africans being brought in to these areas around 1501 or so. And then we're going to see the expansion of the transatlantic slave trade with the Asiento de Negros of 1518. Signed by King Charles V, okay, also known as King Charles I. And the role that Bartolomeu de las Casas plays, who was a bishop who traveled with Columbus on many of his voyages, Bartolomeu de las Casas, okay, And the importation of black slaves to work in the Americas was the inspiration of the Spanish bishop Bartolomé de las Casas, whose support of black slavery was motivated by humanitarian concerns. He wasn't necessarily concerned about the Africans, even though he is going to regret his decision to recommend that the Africans be enslaved. He is going to regret that decision and work the rest of his life to end the slave trade. But it's a little too late. It's a little too late now. It's exploded. African slaves were first brought to the New World shortly after its discovery by Christopher Columbus, or unconquering. Upon his arrival in the Bahamas, Columbus himself captured seven of the natives for their education, quote unquote, their education on his return to Spain. However, the slave trade proper only began in 1518 when the first black cargo direct from Africa landed in the West Indies. So when they look at 1518, they're talking about the Asiento de Negros signed by King Charles V. Okay. Now, the transatlantic slave trade goes back to 1441, then start in 1518. But some timelines or some maps that you look at will look at 1518 as a starting point. They're trying to minimize the severity of the damage and try to cut out about 60 years of the transatlantic slave trade. Bartolomé de las Casas argued that the enslavement of Africans and even of some whites, proving that in the early period, slavery did not operate according to exclusive racial demarcations, would save the indigenous Amerindian populations, which were not only dying out, but engaging in large-scale resistance as they opposed their excessively harsh conditions. As a result, King Charles V, King of Spain, agreed to the Asiento de Negros, or slave trading license, of 1518. He signed this August of 1518, which later represented the most coveted prize in European wars, as it gave to those who possessed it a monopoly in slave trading. You can't talk about the transatlantic slave trade and not talk about the Asiento de Negros. How many people have never heard of the Asiento? How many people have never heard of Bishop Bartolomé de las Casas? You can't talk about the transatlantic slave trade and not talk about the Asiento. This is just a fraction of the type of information that I deal with in these online courses that I teach, that I put together the curriculum, I put together the content, develop the slides, all of this. Okay, so if you learned anything today, visit our website, theAfricanHistoryNetwork.com. You can use this information with your children, use this with your family. Register for the online courses right now. We have the bundle pack for only $80. You get this class and my second class that I teach on Sundays, Black Resistance Movements from the Haitian Revolution, U.S. Civil War, Civil Rights Movement, and Black Power Movement. And we'll see you in class today, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember, and also you can support the African History Network. Another way, $THEAHNShow through Cash App, $THEAHNShow through Cash App, and through PayPal, paypal.me/theAHNShow. So we have the information right on the homepage of our website as well. And so this helps us keep doing the research, stay on the air, keep broadcasting. I'll be on the road some this summer, speaking in different cities or expos, et cetera. So I'm trying to line that up as well. So this helps cover expenses, things of that nature. All right. So if you learned anything today, definitely support us. Follow us on our Facebook fan page, The African History Network, The African History Network, and our YouTube channel, Michael M. Hotep, IMHOTEP. Remember, right now is correct your own behavior. It's not over till we win. Wakanda forever. And we'll see you in class today, and I'll see you on the radio when I'm on Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Talk to you next time. Peace.